G'day, it's Daniel Harford. Welcome to the Best of the Breakfast Club on RSN 927. It was jam-packed. Check it out.
Great to have the team with us. The full complement on the Breakfast Club. Adam White is back after a midweek rotation to freshen him up for the finals. Whitey, good morning to you.
Good morning, Daniel.
Nice to have you back.
I'm not sure whether I'm fresh, but I'm back.
You're fresh.
I'm mentally fresh.
You're much fresher than you were, than you would have been. Had you backed it up.
That's correct. It's still part of this recovery that's taking far too long.
Rotation policy, Brad Haddin and Justin Langer have inspired me.
Yeah, that's right.
The way they've selected their team for the Ashes, players in and players out. This is keeping them fresh for a five-test series. It's what we need from you. Mm. It's a big finals campaign coming up.
Well, I had to come in today because my man Isaac Smith, 200 games.
200.
And so we're looking forward to chatting to him. And as you said, Hawthorn's still a chance to make the finals. The result that really hurt them on Sunday was the Bulldogs beating the Giants, because it was pretty much as simple as if the Giants had won, all Hawthorn had to do was beat West Coast and they were in. Now, it's a big challenge, but
all they had to do was beat West Coast in Perth.
Well, they almost beat them only about 8 weeks ago.
In Perth.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm saying that's all that now. Yes. They can win against West Coast, but they still then have to rely on Adelaide defeating the Bulldogs. So it is actually out of their hands.
I wonder if Isaac's done the numbers.
I don't think he would be that sort of person that does the numbers.
Probably not. Probably not, but we'll ask him the question anyway, just to see what we get. Sharon McMahon is Australia's greatest ever netballer. She says, Soccer Super Netball, better than anyone else on the planet. It's great to have her back as part of our team on a Wednesday morning. Good morning, Sherelle.
Good morning. And I choose not to take offence that the reason you're here on Wednesday is for Isaac. Whitey, I thought maybe you were in just to say hi to me. It's been a long time.
It has been a long time since
I've seen you. So I'm very excited. And rotation policy, maybe load management is really crucial when you're at the top end. It's more of a load management thing for me.
It's a good point.
Just making sure that we're not, different athletes and different superstars just need to be managed with how much they can give us.
Couldn't agree more. This is the insight into your high-performance brain these days as assistant coach of the mighty Melbourne Vixens. Who lost on the weekend, by the way. Yes. What happened to us? I'm very disappointed.
Yes.
I'm emotionally investing,
you should.
On the back of your involvement, well, I've been there anyway, but the back of your involvement, getting back in, I'm emotionally invested. And boy, I was sad.
Well, it was a tough loss because the girls started extremely well. We went into quarter time with a 6-goal margin.
We're up by 10 midway through the second.
Up by 10. They kept pushing it out. And then the Lightning team, I mean, they've won the previous two premierships. And there's a reason for that. They're a very solid team. And unfortunately, as they started to come back at us, we weren't able just to hold them off. So, do you know what? I think it's very disappointing, and we've been chatting over the last couple of weeks about how to get the best out of ourselves leading into finals. And
all the girls have.
We have.
Not we, as in here.
Well, not in here. We as
internally, inside the four walls.
Inside the four walls of the Vixens. And I guess it's just at this point, it has to be part of the makeup of the team, and it's just more learnings for them. We've now secured third spot. We can't move up or down, so we know we're going to have a home final in the first week of finals. So this week against the Magpies, it's another big game because they're just outside the four, so they'll be throwing everything they can at us, and that'll be another good test.
The thing that hurts me most about this, Whitey, about the Vixens' performance on the weekend was, like, there's clearly infighting and turmoil at Sunshine Coast Lightning. They've sacked their coach, Nolan Tarua. Sacked the coach. I read this in the paper today.
There was a player exodus at the start of the year.
There was.
So there was a club in turmoil and we still couldn't beat them.
What I liked, just how impressive Sherelle was then. She really went into coach mode.
I do. I accidentally do that. Yeah, I don't. It's not intentional, but I know that I do that when I speak about the Vixens.
Because there is that suggestion, obviously, that Simone McInnes is in line to be the next national coach. And you would just think that Sherelle would then just elevate to the senior coaching position of the Vixens. And the way she was just talking then, that just had senior coach written all over it.
Well, I was thinking Fremantle. I wasn't bothering with Suncorp Super Netball anymore.
Joyce Brown type situation. Was it Fitzroy or
Fitzroy she spoke about.
Yeah. Remember being front page of probably the Sun back then, not the Herald Sun.
Probably was.
That she was going to potentially be the coach of Fitzroy.
That's right. I do remember that.
I do like Perth.
There we go. This is basically an audition today for you. We have a lot of listeners in Perth. Steve Rossich used to listen to the program, but there's not much point having him on side anymore because he's gone too. So Dale Alcock might be your man. I hope he loves the show over there in the West. He gets up early.
What,
in fact, Rev in Albany will know. Rev, let us know if Dale Alcock loves the show.
What was your initial reaction when you found out that he, Rossalind, had been sacked?
Well, my initial reaction was, oh boy. But upon further thinking about it, I thought, oh, it's probably not too big a surprise, really. But I was, the fact that the trigger was pulled did surprise me, I must admit. But at the end of the year, I thought it might have happened anyway. Might have been an amicable parting of ways, or as amicable it can be. But I must admit, when I got in the car yesterday and I turned on the radio and I heard in the news that Ross had been sacked, I thought, oh boy.
It's an unusual situation for it to be a combo of the coach and CEO, is it not?
Yeah.
That's
he had to. I think he had to, Steve Ross.
Is that how close?
He tied himself to Ross.
Yeah.
He extended the contract and was adamant, as recently as 3 weeks ago, two or three weeks ago, that Ross would be there. And Ross is the coach and he will be there to support him. So I think once you do that and you make your bed, you've got to go.
Looking from the outside in, it did appear that the club was quite keen to get the power base back. And that the Ross Lyon, Steve Rossich union was very, very strong, and that it was time for the club to get that power back. And particularly with Ross, when it comes to the actual playing group and the football department, that maybe he had just been or become too powerful and that they needed to sort of realign. That's, I don't know what you thought there, Half, but that's how I sort of felt it was playing out. And, you know, we've been speaking about it for some time that the jungle drums are beating too loudly for there not to be something going on. There was too much being leaked out of the football club. And often when things start getting leaked, it's a sign of a club that has some problems, obviously.
Yeah.
But too much was getting out. And Ross Lyon was too much on the defensive virtually at every press conference. And you know, I think we talked about Fremantle at half year when they beat Collingwood at the MCG. They were sixth on the table. I think it was 7-5 at the time.
Yeah.
And they did get a lot of injuries in the second half of the year that were kind of understated a little bit, considering that we want to build excuses for Collingwood and Essendon and the Giants. But, you know, as Ross said yesterday, 8 of their best 16 weren't available over the last sort of 6 to 8 weeks, which has been a contributing factor in them dropping down a little bit.
Well, one of the interesting things that was said was that it wasn't about wins and losses. It didn't come down to that. So I found that an interesting thing. So then, okay, well, what is it? Is it about that? And for me, it would have been, I mean, you know, we always want more information. Okay, so if it's not about that, which on the surface is often what it is about, what is it?
Well, it's funny because they said it wasn't about wins and losses, but then it was about the fact
not
they hadn't made the finals
yet.
In four consecutive years.
That's right.
So, but I do, I mean, it's one of those difficult situations, Half, where a club in the face of a sacking tries to actually protect the player, the person that they've sacked.
Mm.
But by doing that, they actually create problems for themselves because they find it hard in justifying the decision that they've made. I thought the Fremantle president handled himself extremely well yesterday. But there is still those unanswered questions that they just don't go down that path because they do try and protect the individual, which I think is noble, but it also creates problems.
I think no doubt between the lines yesterday, there are cultural issues at that football club. Even your mate Tommy Morris from Fox Sports was saying last night that because there's so much turmoil and anxiety around the football club, that's why they're leaking and the people don't want to go to work at that football club.
Really?
Yeah.
As strongly as that?
That's part of the reporting coming out from yesterday, from last night. So there's clearly something wrong and they identify the board clearly now that something had to change. There had to be a circuit breaker and Ross wasn't the one to take them forward. Ross said himself yesterday at his press conference that at the end of 2020, there was no way in hell, I think was the phrase, or no way possible that they would have extended him on the back of that. So he's only there because he had that extra year, and the committee or the board have decided that, well, we can't wait 12 months. We can't have this fester for another 12 months and eat away at the values and the core of their footy club for any longer. So the Band-Aid was pulled yesterday.
We'll talk to Steve O'Moore because he is well aware of what's going on. But do you think Ross Lyon will be a senior coach again?
No, I think there'll be another role in football for Ross, a director of coaching style role for Ross. I don't think
Well, the history says not too many get a third tour of duty, particularly without a premiership. Now, Rocket did, our Monday analyst. Mm-hmm. He got a third tour at the Gold Coast, slightly extenuating circumstances, I think.
Yeah.
Malcolm Blight did, but he won a premiership. There's not too many others that have had a third tour of duty, certainly without a flag.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I think it seems to me, and I'm talking to two high-performance coaches at the moment, it feels that coaching's changed and that the old style, fiery, what's the word? The brimstone? Fire and brimstone. That sort of coach, the one that's, the hard man and you get stuck into them and all that sort of thing, that's no longer the way to go about things. That it has to be all about relationship building and all that sort of thing, and connection and this sort of thing. Now, most, and we'll talk to Brendan Goddard a little bit later on, most, not all, but most players say they have this really strong connection with Ross Lyon.
Yep.
But there's also others that don't.
Yeah, I think if you're in the 25 of Ross's teams, that's sort of the starting squad plus the extra couple of fringe players, I think you'll have a great relationship. And that's not too dissimilar to any coach, I reckon, in fairness to Ross in this situation. If you're off Broadway a bit as a player and you're not getting opportunities or game time, because that's what you want. You play to play. You want to be on the list in any sport to play. And if you're not getting an opportunity, you're always sort of resenting the coach to a degree. It's never your fault. It's always somebody else's fault. And you might take some responsibility for it, and you might not be just good enough. But I think there's always that relationship breakdown between a portion of a list and the coach because they're just not getting that look. Is that mm-hmm. fair enough, Cheryl?
Yeah, I think so. And I think those conversations are always a bit tougher, whereas if you're in the squad and, there's things that are going well, it's much easier to have that kind of upbeat, lighthearted aspect of a relationship. And I guess in an AFL perspective too, there's a big list. That is a big group of athletes that can sometimes be quite needy, is not the right word, but, those relationships are important. So how much time and emotional energy do you have to extend it out past those important players? That would be the other thing for me. It's, there's a lot to encompass there.
We'll talk more about it after 7 with Steve-O when he joins us to go through all the latest news in footy. It was a big day of news yesterday. Certainly that was the headline act, Ross and Steve over there at Fremantle, but there's more to come with Steve-O after 7. As you mentioned, Brendan Goddard will join us after 8 o'clock as well to talk about that. Brad Haddon still to come after 8 o'clock. Kelsey Brown talking super netball and her knee. Isaac Smith, game number 200 in Inner Sanctum for the Hawks after about 7:30. Heaps to talk about. Michael Zarafa not too far away, just by the way.
Yeah, and just to answer a question off the Twitter. In fact, it's off the text message.
Off the Twitter.
Yes, Port Adelaide can make the 8. What needs to happen is that Adelaide needs to win, West Coast needs to win, and then Port Adelaide needs to win healthily against Freo.
Right. Okay. Good luck with that. Now, Michael Zarafa is very, very keen to go gangbusters himself. And not too far away, August 31 is the chance for him to get on the main screen against Jeff the Hornet Horn in the big event at the Bendigo Stadium for the WBA Oceania Middleweight title, Oriental Middleweight title, the vacant Middleweight Asian Oceania Championship. It is a 10-round bout over 10 rounds of 3 minutes, and our man, MZ, is what we're going to call him now, is joining us on the line on a Wednesday morning. Michael, good morning.
Good morning. How are we?
We're going well, mate. We were asking, I don't know if you know the racing game or not, have you got a relation, Brent?
Negative. Not that I know of.
Right, that's all right. We're just checking because we're heavily racing focused here, and Brent Zarafa's on the racing coverage of the TV. So we thought we might ask that early doors. Hey, how's the build up been? Because this is a big, big opportunity for you. Jeff Horn was a former world champion. This is a big chance for you to go global.
Yeah, look, the opportunity is huge. The team and I are excited, and everyone's getting behind it, which is great. It's putting Australian boxing back on the map. So. Looking forward to something, 9 days away or 10 days away, and yeah, the build-up's been huge.
Oh, and we know, what about Horn? When you got this opportunity to take on Jeff Horn, did you start to? Are you one of those guys that researches their style, or is that somebody else's position in the camp? And you just worry about the physical preparation.
I just worry about training. Sticking to the game plan that my team organised. We knew who he was going into this fight and what he's accomplished. We know it's going to be a tough fight, but. Look, we're backing ourselves and our ability and believe we can upset the game and and come home with the win.
Well, how are you going to upset the game? Have you, do you think there's any chinks in his armour?
100%. You know, I believe he's only got one style. He's tough and he has a bit of power, but he's never fought anyone like me, you know, who's got the range, height, speed, you know, fitness. I really believe he's going to struggle with my style and our game plan that's in motion. If we stick to it and all goes well, we'll definitely come home with that W.
Well, it's fair to say probably that you do hold the underdog status going into this game, into this fight. What's that like? What's the mental side of it like for you? How do you prepare when you're going in for a fight like this?
Like I said, we just trust in our ability. We do all the hard work in the gym. At the end of the day, there's not much more you can do. I just go out there and give it my absolute best. I've got nothing to lose up in the game, being the underdog, and there's not much pressure on me. And you know, like I said, if we stick to what we know and do what we got to do, we'll definitely come home with that W. He only has one style. You know, I mean, we can adjust. We've got speed, we've got power, and he's overlooked that. And I truly believe he's made a mistake.
So we think of Jeff Horn as being one of the biggest names in boxing in this country, and he had that famous fight against Manny Pacquiao. From your point of view, is this your biggest fight you've had?
I've fought bigger names in Peter Coolen and Cal Brooks, but I've never had the opportunity to fight someone with such a status in my backyard. So it's definitely a huge fight. And the team and I, you know, Sam LeBruna, Blake Caparello and Brendan Burke are excited and, you know, looking forward to it.
And so do you approach this, similar to Sherelle's question, from your mindset into this, do you go in there nervous, anxious, or do you just go in there with supreme confidence that you can get the job done? How do you mentally prepare for this?
We've got a strong team, and I've been seeing a sports psychologist leading into this fight just to get my mental game even stronger than what it is. And, I'm excited. Normally, nerves kick in, but this time around, it's different. I have a good feeling about it. I'm more excited, if anything. I'm actually counting down the days. So I know it's going to be a hard fight, and I've told myself it's going to be a hard fight, but I've also told myself that this is it. It's a must-win for us, you know. I wasn't going to die that night. So I'm going out there laying it all on the table and I'm going to put on a show for the boxing fans.
Yeah, well, ironically, I'd made an appointment to see Harley Benal. I sent an email through. I'll be off-site until 10 o'clock, just giving Harley some advice. That's Utong and Lincoln in Fremantle, funnily enough. But Peter Bell rang and said, mate, you need to get here at 9 o'clock and have a meeting with Dale and Craig. And I thought it was unusual Steve wasn't there, so I thought, well, Steve's in trouble. And then I thought I'll ring my lawyer because I might be in trouble. And I thought it's either one or two of us, so it was two of us.
That was Ross Lyon yesterday facing the media after he was sensationally sacked by the Fremantle Football Club. Mark Stevens was all over from Channel 7. He joins us. Hello, Steve-O.
Yeah, half. Sherelle Whitey, a big morning, very big morning. There was talk of a bit of a gathering of staff and whatever and a meeting there. So I texted somebody very close to Ross and just got the two words back. He's gone.
He's gone.
And the CEO's gone as well.
Well, that was the kicker, wasn't it?
Yeah. I said, well, crazy, you sure? Sacked? And he said, yes. So big, big story. It was. It sort of came from left field for sure. The big stories are the coaching appointments at times, like David Teague. We had a hunch that was coming, but this one, it was like slapping you across the face half.
Well, we sort of had a little hunch, didn't we? There's been a lot talked about Ross's position in Perth through the year.
We talked about it earlier this morning. I think it was inevitable. It was more the timing of it.
Yeah.
That, I mean, you can look back in hindsight and say, well, they were officially out of the finals race on the weekend. They lost again at home, all those sorts of things. But I think when, especially with the CEO going as well, that doesn't happen too
often. It's next level, Whitey.
It is next level.
Speaking of next level, just we'll get back to that. A lot of feedback coming through off the SMS about George's quality tips.
He's been marginalised?
No, we had a little bit of an issue, but we've got these numbers. We'll get to them to you shortly. So George's quality numbers coming shortly.
People question George's validity on this program. But
five straight away.
SMS just goes into meltdown.
Where the hell is George? Yeah. Where's George? No, George? What's happened to George? That's what the SMS is
about.
We want George. We'll get to them very shortly. We just had a bit of an issue this morning. Yeah.
Interesting press conference by Ross. Normally they sort of manufacture something like an audition for a new job or a new way forward. He went to a suburban park in Bicton. I've never been to Bicton, but it's near the Swan River.
Sounds like
there.
A Chinese restaurant.
Somewhere in Bali.
But, suburban park in the middle of nowhere. He turned up just in a sloppy Joe, if you like, a sloppy sweater, And that's just Ross, isn't it? Most coaches would turn up in a crisp white shirt like you've got on, half, maybe a jacket, and push forward. I think Ross has got the confidence that did not need to be an audition. I think rightly so.
So you reckon he'll coach again?
No doubt. He's just too good.
Where's he coaching?
Well, there's opportunities, isn't there? I think you can't rule out Essendon completely if things go pear-shaped the last two games, which you never know could happen.
They're playing finals.
Yeah, they're playing finals, but you have to thrust forward the next 5 years.
All right, I'll ask you a question. A couple of questions. Would Essendon be better if Ross Lyon was coaching them?
Let me think about that for 1 second.
Just yes or no?
Yes. Quite clearly,
would the Giants be better?
Yes.
Would Adelaide be better?
Yes.
Would Port Adelaide be better?
Jury's out. I think Ken Hinckley's done quite a good job.
Because I think those four clubs have currently got coaches that are contracted.
Yes.
But four of them I would describe as inconsistent. Four of them I'd describe as flaky, under pressure at times.
Giants haven't been inconsistent. They've been consistently good. This is the first rule.
That's probably a little bit harsh on
the Giants. They've underachieved.
But I think they've potentially underachieved.
I like Leon Cameron. I think he's fantastic for what he's done up there. But I believe if Ross Lyon had gone to GWS when Leon did, I think they'd have two, at least, trophies in the cabinet.
Because
it's just the way he goes about it. That structure system, there's no doubt with the list in 2016, I look back at that prelim final, which I often do, actually, as a Bulldog supporter. But
somehow the Bulldogs got in here.
It's an all-star lineup. If you look through, they should have won it that
year.
How
many trophies has Ross Lyon secured?
He hasn't got one yet. He's had four grand finals. Well, four grand finals is not easy.
Three? Three of them?
No, there's a replay.
Only three, wasn't it?
Only three.
Frio, St Kilda twice.
No, it's four.
Four, including the replay, it's four.
Can you recall?
You have to include the replay.
No, I don't think you can.
Well, I'll tell you now, Whitey. Anyway, simple terms. Ross Lyon has coached on grand final day four times.
Well,
he's coached on three grand final days and one grand final replay day.
Correct. Anyway, he's been involved late.
And he's been unlucky. A toe poke here, a bad bounce there.
There's no
and he got Frio, believe it or not, the purple haze into a grand final.
But this is my point about what he did at Fremantle. He turned a club that didn't have a lot of strength to it, a reputation of being a bit of an easy beat.
Mm-hmm. Well, Matthew Pavlich
he turned them
yesterday.
Into a hard-nosed, consistent football team with the playing group he had.
Yep.
My point on those four clubs, Essendon, Giants, Adelaide and Port Adelaide, you would question at times whether the current coaches have got a consistency of effort, a consistency of performance out of those four teams. I believe that Ross Lyon would make all four of those teams a much harder team to beat on a week-to-week basis. That's all I'm saying. And I would be surprised if those four clubs aren't just sitting around an office this morning going, "Oh, gee, do we look at it? Do we think about it? Or do we just leave it alone?" Because there's a lot of baggage that also goes with Ross Lyon.
Well, that was my next point. We spoke earlier about the situation at Fremantle, which seems to be almost a toxic place, from what we're led to believe, Steve-O.
But the players like him. The players have always been behind him.
25 do. That sort of seems to be what happens when somebody coaches a team. The 25 like him, and the rest sort of, not give me a go, I hate him. That's neither here nor there. But it becomes a club issue about how things are represented and how things are put in place from a football department perspective and what that does to the entire club. We heard Dale Alcock saying yesterday that they needed to change. It was affecting things at the football club. So do you want to bring that with you? What is the point before? Do you want to have that baggage with you? Because clearly Ross does bring baggage.
Now, a small amount
he's
of baggage.
A very, very capable
Carry on
AFL
luggage.
Coach.
It's not big.
I think it's got to be checked in, I reckon.
But he's...
I reckon it's going to be checked in. I don't reckon you put in the overhead compartments.
Well Mick Malthouse came along with five surfboards and a few sets of golf clubs.
Well, I had that end up.
What's that called? The oversized baggage.
But it's a good example, though, Half, that Carlton knew what they were getting with Mick and decided that they'd take that on, and it didn't work. But the philosophy was sound at the time, but it just didn't work.
Mm.
That's the situation with Ross now, that if you're going to take him on, you know that it's going to be a bumpy ride.
Yes.
But
not necessarily on performance, but on what comes with him coming in.
Well, we keep saying that, Steve-O, that it's not about wins and losses. So what was the bottom line?
Well, just some tensions in the footy department, the way the place is being run. The membership was down, as simple as that.
And is that Ross's fault?
Well, it does come into it in the end. It's just part of the... You've seen the Teague train with David Teague, the fan power, and people are happy. They're all getting on board. The crowd are turning up. Perth Media went hard at him. It was just almost untenable.
Yeah, but why? It's not wins and losses. We heard that from the president.
I suppose that starts it, though, Sherelle, doesn't it? It has to start with wins and losses.
Well, we talked about it this morning. They said it wasn't wins and losses, but then in the same time they said, well, we haven't played finals 4 years in a row, that we need to be better.
Yeah.
I just think, isn't it just, it's run its race, it's run its course? You know, Peter Bell has come in as a fresh face in recent times in an administrative sense, and I think Peter Bell's a fairly influential person.
But I think you talk about baggage, but whenever he comes to a place to start with, there's a huge uplift.
Yeah,
well, he did it with Freo. He did it to St Kilda.
Seventh, third, fourth, first. His first 4 years at Fremantle, ladder positions at the end of the home and away season. His last 4 years: 16th, 14th, 14th, 13th.
Yep, the list isn't great.
Well, these are the conversations that go with Ross. Is that he goes hard with a really good list, and if he doesn't get there, the backside falls out of the place, and which is effectively what's happened to Fremantle. It happened at St Kilda, and now it's happened to Fremantle.
So someone has got to be ready to go hard
and be in that window to contend, to even consider it, I reckon.
Yeah. Well, I think
otherwise you're going to leave you hanging at the end, and your club's going to be in a hole for another 4 or 5 years.
Like, Whitey,
that's just what history says.
Whitey's a big Essendon watcher. Do you just get a hunch still that Worsfold's not completely safe? Because with Ross Lyon on the whiteboard, you have to think about it. With that list, it's mature.
I'm not so sure whether you'd use the word... Is John Worsfold safe? I'm still to be convinced John Worsfold really wants to do it post this year. That would be... it's a question. It's not a statement. I would wonder. It's interesting that the text messages are going to overdrive here. There's so many coming through. And a lot of it is around Ross Lyon's persona, his personality, his arrogance. But these are perception things. Yeah. They're not necessarily the reality. But there's no doubt it hurts him.
No doubt about that.
Look, he's good. No, he's good. He's dry. He's interesting. The fans are saying
it's not Ross either. They're saying he's condescending.
But I think when you meet Ross one-on-one, he's actually very nice.
But you get to do that.
Yeah. But the fans don't get to do that. So you live by your perception. That's right. How you're judged.
So his little gags and whatever at the presses obviously don't resonate with people.
But it's seen as arrogant. It's seen as condescending. And again, whether it's right or wrong, so much of sport is about perception. Not necessarily about reality.
Well, I trust Nick Riewoldt, Brendan Goddard, they're fantastic people in footy. And they speak in such glowing terms about Ross Lyon. We've got BJ coming up later. I mean, that's good enough for me.
All right. Oh, so let's go back to Fremantle for a second. Don't worry about Ross. The contenders.
Justin Longmuir is the buzzword and has been for some time, perhaps, at Collingwood. The big, tall, former... Ruckman, wasn't he? A key position player. Has been doing very well at Collingwood as a key assistant. Team defence, he set that up last year in particular in the run to the grand final. So has some support from Peter Bell, obviously. And could John Worsfold do a straight swap? His family's in Perth. He's coaching okay. He's experienced to maybe come in and do that.
Well, they want a West Coast man at Freo? Is that sort of rivalry?
I think they can get beyond
delineation.
The last four coaches Fremantle have had... have been Victorian, and it hasn't yielded them a premiership. So I wonder whether they will say okay, because I think they've even WA the two coaches that have tasted the ultimate success were actually Victorian.
Yeah, that's true.
So, but because there was always this feeling, oh, no, you've got to get someone from outside the WA bubble. I wonder whether they go back to that now. Justin Longmuir, assistant coach at Freo and West Coast. And then later at Collingwood and played at Freo, as Steve-O said. It seems the logical one, but often the logical one doesn't get it.
My little source says that Ross isn't interested in going back to St Kilda, even if they did put out the olive branch there for a back-to-the-future move. I just don't think he's comfortable.
Why?
I'm not sure. He's sort of been there and done that. Perhaps there's people still hanging around the club that he's uncomfortable to deal with. But I would have thought, as good as Brett Ratten is, Ross Lyon would make St Kilda a better side straight away. I think we know what we would get.
I don't think we know what we get with Brett.
Almost at the Al Clarkson level.
Ross?
Almost.
I don't think
it would be healthy for St Kilda to go back, irrespective of what Ross Lyon thinks. It just doesn't feel right.
No, I don't think that'll happen. And I'd be very surprised if Secunda made too many advances in that regard. Let's talk about, move on from Ross, because it was big news, absolutely big news. We'll talk to Brendan Goddard more about that after 8 o'clock. Your mates at the Giants, should they have got a medical report in on time?
Well, this is an interesting one, Half. It's a story that probably, with the Ross Lyon sacking, sort of got lost in the wash a bit yesterday. Obviously, the incident with Bonampelli.
Yes.
On Haynes, and it was deemed high and low impact because at that stage there wasn't any apparent injury and he played out the game.
Yes.
So that was a decision by the MRO on available evidence, and then a little bit later on a medical report came out that he had a broken larynx.
Now, why would there not have been a medical report earlier, which is regulation MRO protocol, that if you get a assessing an incident as maybe on the line or needing further investigation, a medical report is given to the MRO straight away.
Yeah,
why would that not have been on hand?
I think there is some frustration in there that at times they dribble through. They're not that quick to get the medical report in. And obviously there has to be some sort of deadline so they can announce the results.
They can't be fuming. If it's on them, if they're responsible for the medical report, then GWS cannot be sitting there going, well, hang on a second, how come the Bonds are allowed to play when my man's got a fractured larynx?
Well, perhaps it was late getting a scan or perhaps seeing some sort of specialist. But
well, that's on them.
Yep.
As far as I'm concerned.
Should the AFL, could they have said, look, and put an asterisk on this, we're just, this one's a little bit complicated, Chris-o. Can you just hold on for this?
Because it's a strange situation that the outcome changes so significantly now that we have the medical report. It would have gone to a 2-week suspension, I think, is the on the what how the matrix would would work out. So it goes from a fine to him missing the first week of finals. So it's a strange one for me that they make the call before they've got all the information.
Yeah, I think complaining now is a little bit rich. You're right, Half, because they could have said, just give us more time, because we're concerned there is a fracture here. But obviously the medical report didn't come in, and they have a set time where Chris-o does his press conference, etc. But you'd think in future that this would lead to perhaps... They could have said, look, the Bonampelli one, we're still awaiting further evidence, and we'll have a result on that one by midday
that's
tomorrow.
The responsibility of the Giants
communicate
that with the AFL. Yes. I think that's bad luck, and it sets a very dangerous precedent if you go back and start changing things into the future.
No, you can't go changing.
My information comes.
No.
Yeah. Did they put a medical report in, or they just didn't?
Well, I just don't think they got it to them in time, or perhaps it wasn't as serious as they initially thought. I don't know, but that can't be a criticism of Chris-o or the AFL. This is on the Giants. And the irony is that the Giants will probably play the Bulldogs in a final.
Yeah.
And Bonampelli will have 32 disposals and 3 goals and
Haynes won't be there.
And as I told you 2 weeks ago, Bont will win the Brownlow. So that big ramifications with what happened there.
Well, your money would have been down the drain had he been suspended, without a doubt.
But it did look a fair bump, Half, on the replay, and it seemed to just catch him a fraction high and perhaps just in the wrong spot.
So that's then not a fair bump.
Yeah.
So it's not a fair bump.
So it's all hit him high. Do you think the Bont's a bit lucky?
I think he's absolutely lucky.
Well, clearly, if he's got a fractured larynx, you're lucky. I don't think there's any two ways about that, Steve.
And again, like most
cases... Is Ian Collins still out there? He might actually come back and
get
Bont
cases,
like he did with Chris Green.
Yeah, that's right. Again, in most cases with the bump, it's not that Marcus Bonampelli intentionally meant to bump him where he did, but the reality is, as a consequence of the bump, Haynes is going to miss some footy, and usually that constitutes a suspension. That's just usually what happens.
Right, that's the Bond situation.
It was a bigger story, Half.
It's a big blow, that, for Haynes.
To be honest, if Ross Lyon hadn't been sacked yesterday and there was a smart newspaper editor, that's back page. But today,
it
just buried away.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Isaac Smith, the champ from the Hawks, has been good enough to join us ahead of a big week for him. Game number 200 on the weekend. Good morning, Isaac.
Morning, Half. Looks like a bigger week for you, or a bigger day.
Why do you say that?
Well, I've never seen you in a nicely pressed white shirt on a Wednesday morning.
It's a bit intimidating, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's very a work sharp. To do. Just stepping things up.
You got cash money going on.
No, not cash money. Okay, I wish cash money, not as much as you'll be getting next year wherever you are in the football world. We'll talk about that shortly. But it's a big week. Game number 200. Where's your press conference?
It was yesterday, huh? It was scheduled the same time as Jordan Lewis's. And I think we worked out who's more important in the competition.
Well, hang on. Clarko was at Jordan's.
Yeah, Clarko was at Jordan's. The media at Jordan's.
A few would have rocked up for yours, though.
Nah, don't be silly.
Did you have anyone rock up?
Yeah, one. Club strategically placed it in the time slot that Jordan placed his. I think I know where I would have went as well.
Was that intentional? Were you saying that was an intentional thing?
No, I don't think it was intentional.
It just might have been the way it worked out.
Stop people asking questions about your future. We'll put a press conference on at the same time.
Yeah, it could have been a smart thing to do.
200 games, Isaac.
Yeah.
That's a lot of games. I'm not sure the percentage of the population. Maybe 9%. I'll try and do some numbers on the AFL population that ever get to that number. It's a bloody good effort.
Yeah, it's all right.
That's it.
Yeah, I don't know. It's only just another game and see how
we go. Yeah, this one is just another game, but yeah, the fact that you've been able to play it and coming in late.
Yeah.
And there's a whole lot of elements and layers to your story that I think many people admire, and 200 games is a great achievement. You should be very proud of yourself, young man.
Yeah, well, I was playing country footy at 21.
Yeah.
So to get 200 by 30 is a pretty good effort, I guess. Been lucky. I haven't missed too many games. Probably only missed 10 or 15 over 9 years of football. So, yeah, when you look back on it and think back about it, it's pretty nice. But hopefully a few more to come, Half.
Well, I would like to see them.
Take us back to that time, because you didn't have the traditional pathway to be an AFL footballer. So when you're playing local footy at 19, playing VFL at 21, did you dream to play AFL, or how did or just sort of fall into your lap sort of thing? What was it like at that time?
Not particularly. As a kid, I used to dream to play AFL footy, but once I sort of missed the boat at 18, I didn't think it was on the cards. Not that I missed the boat, I wasn't involved in any representative stuff, so I wasn't even on the boat to miss the boat or on the wharf to miss the boat.
No tickets for that either.
Yeah, I was still inland, couldn't even get to the water. But, yeah, mate, it wasn't on my radar at all. And I thought my last year of country footy was going to be my last year of footy. I was working in sport, I just studying sports management and thought I'd be working in sport. So I just took the approach that I was going to go and have fun and play with three or four of my best mates. And before I knew it, I was playing in a VFL grand final and then drafting the first round of the AFL draft, which was a little bit of a surprise to me, but probably more of a surprise to everyone else around me.
I know you've told this story before, but it's sort of apt to talk about again as you play 200th. Just that whole thing of the whirlwind of being a VFL player and then going first round in the draft. When did you get a suspicion that, hang on a sec, my life could be about to change?
I think every week in the VFL finals. So we had 3 weeks in the VFL finals, and each week I came in around with the recruiters, I was getting told. So first week we started, I was going to be rookie before the finals started. That was going to be third round, that was going to be second round, and then we played the grand final and I got told I'd go first round. So, it was an interesting time. But I sort of approach that the way I approach most things. Don't get too worked up about it all.
Wayne in Seymour's giving us a call on 1300 652 927. Good morning to you, Wayne.
Good morning, Daniel, Adam and Cheryl. How are you?
Good morning.
That's my dad. Good morning, Isaac.
Is this your dad?
Yep.
Wayne, are you Wayne Smith?
I'm Wayne the Wombat Smith. Yes.
Wayne the Wombat Smith. Great to have you with us.
Very good.
How proud are you of your son this week?
I reckon Whitey's teed this up.
You're checking your phone.
I don't know what's going on.
I actually met Whitey at Mount Mark, the golf course.
That's exactly right.
And said to him very briefly, who do you follow to his son in football? And he said, my son's a Hawthorn supporter, his favourite player is Isaac Smith. And I said, well, I've got news for you, kid. Isaac's old man. And, I did admire Adam that day because he had to walk around that 9 holes with his son. I thought it was absolutely brilliant. A lot of patience shown. Very proud of Isaac. No father could have a greater son. And very proud of just the way he dealt with all the things that happen in football, and I agree with him wholeheartedly. It's so many footballers these days can't cope with the stress and all that goes on. And I've seen Isaac do some magnificent things off the field as well as on the field. But, for example, he was there with Brett Ratten during his darkest hours. He's been done so many good things for other footballers without anyone knowing. But he's had great people around him. Obviously, Alice is an excellent coach, but he's had certainly Brett and Andrew Russell and Chris Fagan and even people off the ground like originally Jason Burt, Cam Matthews at the present time. So he's been very lucky at Hawthorn, but I think Hawthorn have been very lucky to have him as well.
I was just talking to Isaac before about when he thought that the AFL football dream might be alive and when it may have sort of flickered out with him going through such an untraditional pathway program. As a father, what did you think he had that in him as a young age when he was in country New South Wales?
When I said to Isaac when he was younger, I used to coach him and Luke in juniors, and then he teamed up with Manny Suckling, and I said to Isaac, you've got something that you can't teach your football brain on the field, and he's got that. I think people don't realise how extraordinary football brain is, because he's really the director on the ground for Hawthorn. Well, that's my opinion.
This is what Dad's saying.
and I think that I remember when we were at Ballarat, we used to drive down from Cootamundra and, take 7.5 hours. And I remember he said to me once, "Hi, Dad, I think my dream's over." And I said, "Mate, never say never. You never know." The next week or 2 weeks, we came back. I remember watching him in the replay of the Bredin versus East Grand Final. Was on the weekend of the Easter weekend, and it was at one of the grounds in Ballarat. And I was standing below the commentators in the radio box, and Isaac took—he probably doesn't remember this—but he took the ball from the back pocket, bounced it all the way down to the ground, hand passed it over the head of the fullback to the full forward, and the full forward kicked the goal. And I'm standing below the radio box, and they went silent. And the guy said, "Did you see that?" And I went, "Oh, Jesus, Isaac's got it, but he's too old." And that's what I thought at the time. Because you know what the AFL's like, you've got to be, at 25, you're an old player these days. It's quite ridiculous. I just went, "Oh, my God, he's got it, but he's too old." And then a couple of weeks later, we went down there. We arrived at midnight to his place where him and his mates were living. And
wasn't the most elite setup.
Have you ever had to pull him into line, Wombat? Man with the name Wombat surely has got a pull him into line story. Has he got ahead of himself?
No, not really. No, he's just keeping in line pretty straight. He's got three very strong-willed sisters and also Candice. Yeah, they don't really get away with much.
Nothing.
So he hasn't changed since he's become an AFL superstar?
No. That's one thing about Isaac. If you take football or any sport too seriously, I think that's when you see so many people fall away. But no, he's a team. He loves team, and he even sent a message to one of the local kids teams here playing on the weekend for St Mary's, under 14s, who hadn't apparently been in the team for years. And he said, "Boys, it's all about." They were worried about who they were playing. He said, "You worry together. You go out together. You go off together." And that's the beauty of a team sport.
And what about Isaac? You've got your dad on the line. You're talking about driving you 7.5 hours to play a game of footy and things like that. The impact that he's had and your family have had, because of coming up in such unique circumstances of living in country New South Wales to do what you're doing. I mean, what are the impact of your whole family been?
Yeah, I was very lucky. Mum and Dad are extremely enthusiastic with whatever us kids have decided to do. And they've always sacrificed a hell of a lot. But growing up in country New South Wales, I remember we used to drive to Griffith, which I think was 3 or 4 hours away. We'd be in Sydney, which was 3 or 4 hours away. Anywhere you wanted to go and play sport, you hear Victorians complain when they've got an away game, which is half an hour, because everywhere in Victoria is so close. But in New South Wales, if you want to play a game of football, you can be travelling up to 5 or 6 hours. So, it just became natural to hop in the car and go, but Mum and Dad were always the ones up at the crack of dawn taking us everywhere. We used to have to drive 1 hour and 10 minutes to training every Tuesday and Thursday night there and back. So, we were so lucky as a family, and I'm very fortunate to have the parents that I've had.
Wombat, is he flying you across?
Beg your pardon?
Is he flying you across to Perth?
Oh, yeah, we're going over there, which is good. And, it'll be a great occasion, but I'm just as much wrapped for Isaac that he's going to run out there with some really wonderful, he's got some great mates and kind of been really good to him. But he's Liam Shields and all these guys that he's played with who are really wonderful people. They're wonderful human beings, and he's going to be so excited. And just knows that, 200 games is a big call, but he's also very lucky because he didn't start playing until he's 22, so
yeah.
he's got a lot left in that body.
Time to talk some cricket. The third test at Headingley only a couple of days away, and we need to get inside the camp and find out what the hell is going on after the Lord's Test match. Brad Haddon, the assistant coach of the Aussies, and has been good enough to join us again on the program. Good morning, Brad.
Hey, guys. What's going on?
Well, it's all happening over here, mate, but it's all happening over there. This is what we're reading, we're seeing, we're watching. Steve Smith gone. How close was the call?
Yeah, I think with protocol how it is, he was able to go out and bat the night after he got hit, or the night of getting hit. He passed everything he had to do. Then next that night, he had some symptoms of concussion, didn't pull up that well. So with the short turnaround, after being ruled out with concussion, he wasn't going to be fit for this test match. So common sense prevailed, and he's out of the test match. But this is a great opportunity to find an Ashes hero. So, we're looking forward to whoever comes in.
Looking forward to finding that hero. Just on Steve, I imagine that wasn't a conversation he would have been too keen to have, to be told he wasn't going to be able to play. Did he try and fight it?
No, he didn't. He understood the enormity of what happened. And after not passing the concussion test over the couple of days, it was an easy decision. But we've got some of the world's best medical staff. And, these decisions aren't taken lightly. But protocol, all the protocol he had to pass, he didn't pass. So he was comfortable with the decision. Obviously, you want your best players playing as much cricket as possible. But on this occasion, he wasn't fit for selection.
I was sitting on the couch at about midnight when it happened, and it was such an unnerving thing to watch on television. What was it like in the change rooms when it happened, particularly considering the obvious history with a similar incident?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, you're just concerned for the player's safety, and you want to get someone out there and get eyes on them as quick as you possibly can to see what's going on. And once you know he's okay, then you breathe that little bit easier. It was definitely a pretty hostile spell. I thought for an entertainment value, it was a great test match, especially after all the weather we had, and we didn't think we were really going to get much of a spectacle. But gee whiz, the patrons at Lord's definitely got the money's worth over the test match.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I mean, obviously, Steve has been batting so well. How unsettling is it for the group now that he's now unavailable to play for the third test?
The group's okay. We obviously got ruled out today, so our preparations now about making sure we get the right 11 to win this test match at Leeds. I think if it dragged on for a couple of days, it could have been unsettling for the group. But with the decision being made early, training was really good today. The batters and bowlers had a great hit out. So it's not that unsettling. It's disappointing that Steve is not available for this test match. But it's because it was done so early, everyone's right to go.
And do you think it changes the approach at all, him missing?
In what way? Our approach?
Yes.
Oh, it's obviously he's your best player at the moment. He's a big part of the team. But one thing about it is that you find heroes in these sort of moments. Like, you only have to look at the way Marnus played when he came in as a sub. He turned up to Lord's for 3 days, mixing drinks, training, and all of a sudden he's tapped on the shoulder and asked to go out and save a test match for Australia. So, yeah, it was pretty extraordinary circumstances, but they were not unsettled.
And, gee, he handled it so incredibly well, particularly after being hit as well. And, you know, now we look at Joffa Archer and think, gee, he's sending that ball down so quickly. What are the players saying about potentially or probably having to face up to him again?
They're okay. He bowled some quick balls. But we've got three of those, four of those guys that bowl that sort of pace as well. It was a difficult wicket to face fast bowling on. He was up and down, so it was hard to duck under and get the read of the bounce with the inconsistency of the bounce in the wicket and the slope. So it was all blown up a little bit there because of the inconsistency of the wicket. But from a pace bowling, the guys in Australians, we've grown up with pace and bounce. It was just the inconsistency of the wicket.
Been new chair at Fremantle. New coaching structure will be taking place after yesterday they announced that Ross Lyon would no longer be the coach. And, of course, their assistants are all on notice as well. So it could be a whole new panel at Freo. One man who knows Ross better than most is Brendan Goddard, part of our crew here on The Breakfast Club. He joined us on a Wednesday morning. G'day, BJ.
Morning, all. How are we?
We're going very well, thank you. You've had a bit to say in the last 12 hours or so. They've come to you thick and fast for feedback on Ross. So we thought we'd join the roster. Pardon the pun. He looked very relaxed yesterday, Ross. Do you reckon, is that just Ross? Because obviously a tumultuous decision and big occasion in his coaching career. Is that just Ross, or do you think he's at peace with the world and he's perhaps got his eye on something else?
Peace with the world. I'm not sure about that, but we've seen Ross at his feisty best, or his sarcastic best, particularly in the post-match press conferences. But, you know, it was good to see. He summed it up pretty well, I thought. So, and he added the Rossisms. He reeled off a few others from a few other people, but there's a bit of sarcasm in there, so we saw it all yesterday from Ross, but he seemed to be in a pretty good place.
Yeah, he did. He seemed very relaxed. BJ, I know you've spoken about it already, but do you think he'll coach again? Is that an easy question or a difficult question?
Well, it's difficult because there's obviously one job in particular that's up for grabs, but I did say yesterday that it'd be silly not to at least go through the process with Ross again because of his credentials and what he's done. And then I said, also I said, there's got to be a right fit not only for St Kilda but also Ross as well. So whether they want to go down the process to begin with and then just tick that box, or whether they just think straight off the bat that there's no need to even interview him or speak to him in some way. So I think you've got a guy now who's on the market, and he hasn't ruled out coaching, but there's some word this morning about potentially staying in football but not coaching. But you've seen his language change in the last couple of weeks, so whether he's sort of writing on the wall before this actually happened yesterday, time will tell. But you've got arguably one of the best couple of coaches in the league and in the last decade available, so you'd be silly not to think that there'll be a few teams out there that are contemplating at least talking to Ross anyway and going down that path.
BJ, there's been so much talk about his relationships with the athletes and whether that's good or bad. How much of an emphasis does he put on that side of things as a coach, as opposed to that kind of hard-nosed tactical side of it?
I can't exactly answer that, to be honest, Sherelle, but I think what we've seen in the last couple of years, and I've spoken about it with a couple of old teammates, that there's definitely a softer side to Ross now. And there was a game in particular, in Perth, and Fremantle won, but he came out on the ground and publicly was hugging the players. I think there was even a kiss on the head to one or two of them. And a couple of us past players actually jokingly said the next week that we never saw that from Ross in our time playing under him. So there's definitely a change in Ross. And Ross is smart. Like, he evolves with the game plan, coaching tactics, the way he coaches, the way he builds his relationships. So obviously there's a change in the way, and what I'm referring to, trying to say, is the Gen Z have come on board. There's a different way to approach them and deal with them, and the relationships with players are a little bit different. So he's evolved, and it's certainly from the outside, just of what I've seen personally, he's definitely evolved that side of his game, and he's not as probably as hard-nosed as he used to be, I think.
Do you think...